Speak Up Arkansas. This is a place to
learn about and share the experiences of people impacted by the policies, practices, and programs enacted by your elected officials, implemented by public officials, and whether they have a positive or negative impact. And it could not be a better time for a show holding our political leaders accountable for what they're doing for all those overlooked by the broader community. The 2017 session is in full swing, and there's a lot going on that needs your attention, and we hope to help you understand and act when you feel inclined to do so. And so today on Speak Up Arkansas, we are actually going to be talking about education, specifically a research-based reform platform from Arkansans for Quality Education. But before we do that, I'm going to do a legislative update. I'm Kyle Landberger with the Arkansas Citizens First Congress, and we're a statewide coalition of grassroots groups working together to establish a strong public voice that can increase political influence and hold lawmakers accountable for their decisions. And we have an update on the legislature now to share with you. Monday was the bill filing deadline for lawmakers, and 558 bills were filed on that day alone, bringing the total for this session up to nearly 2,200. This week, we've also seen quite a bit of legislation created by school privatizers, including a bad bill that was pushed through committee by a surprise during a special meeting on Monday evening. SB 308 takes away the power of local taxpayers and their elected school board to decide on the best use of their school facilities. Under SB 308, the state mandates that school facilities be sold to private charter corporations at or below market value and leaves local taxpayers on the hook for financial debts of private charter corporations when they fail. We just got word that SB 308 failed on the House floor by one vote, but it can be brought back. House Bill 1567, which would open Arkansas's voucher program to foster children, also passed a House committee this week. Another bill to expand the Arkansas Succeed Scholarship Program is now law, and it allows private schools with no accreditation to receive public dollars through vouchers for students with special needs. The schools who participate in the Arkansas Succeed Scholarship Program have no oversight, and students who participate must waive their rights granted to them by the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act. In addition, because the schools wouldn't even need to be accredited for 4 years, a student could attend high school and finish it, but be ineligible for a diploma. We also have a big, big bill coming up tomorrow. House Bill 1222 is up for a special order of business in the House Education Committee at 10 a.m. This bill diverts public dollars to subsidize private schools that don't have to meet any of the state standards around accountability, transparency, or quality. It will drain money away from public schools and is a windfall for wealthy families who already send their children to private schools. On to criminal justice, the major criminal justice reform bill of the session, SB 136, passed through the House yesterday and is expected to be signed by the governor this week. While we believe this bill is a step in the right direction to address sentencing reform and prison overcrowding, we are concerned with some of the excessive sentences for probation violations. This bill also creates crisis stabilization centers for people suffering from mental illness and funds de-escalation training for police officers. SB 237 is being heard today in the Senate Judiciary Committee. Actually just passed the Senate Judiciary Committee. SB 237 requires a racial impact statement for bills that create or change a misdemeanor or felony offense and is an important step toward addressing racial and social disparities in the Arkansas criminal punishment system that results in people of color, the poor, and people with mental illness being more harshly treated. SB 294, which would eliminate life without parole for juvenile offenders, is expected to run in House Judiciary tomorrow. We support this bill because it will create a more age-appropriate sentencing standards for minors who commit serious crimes. This bill acknowledges that young people haven't fully developed mentally and cannot fully comprehend the consequences of their action. We also support SB 600, which creates a fair process in the state's eviction laws. Last month, lawmakers passed legislation that we oppose to criminalize tenants for failure to pay rent. SB 600 is an alternative that strengthens the state's civil eviction code and makes criminal eviction unnecessary. We also oppose House Bill 1166, which protects property owners who don't want to fix mold, sewage, or structural issues. Renters deserve a minimum guarantee that they can safely live in properties that they're renting. In addition, today, a House committee approved House Bill 2053, which will eliminate the Fair Housing Commission and put its responsibilities under another state agency. Community advocates spoke out against the bill, but it will now head to the full House. If you would like to get involved or learn more, please visit citizensfirst.org, where you can learn more about these bills and others that we're tracking, and sign up for action alerts that help you contact your legislators on issues that you care about. All right, and now we are going to get to the discussion of the day, an excellent school system for everyone. And we have some members of Arkansans for Quality Education here. And this is a group that formed to push for proven consensus-based education reform at the Capitol. And I'm going to go ahead and let you guys introduce yourselves.
I'm Brenda Robinson, a sixth grade teacher and the president of the Arkansas Education Association. We are the oldest professional association, education professional association in Arkansas, where we advocate not only for students, but we also advocate for our members as well, teachers and education support professionals. But our main focus is making sure that every student has a great public school.
And I'm Rich Huddleston, Executive Director for Arkansas Advocates for Children and Families. We are a statewide nonprofit child advocacy organization that works to ensure that all kids have the resources and opportunities they need to lead healthy and productive lives. And we work on a range of issues, including health care, education, child welfare, juvenile justice, and also the state tax and budget system. And our education work is really focused around the needs of low-income and minority students to make sure that they have everything they need to really be able to succeed in the education system and beyond.
And Candace, could you go ahead and introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm Candace Williams, the Executive Director of Rural Community Alliance. We started back in 2003 after Act 60 came about, which is the mandatory school consolidation annexation law. Schools less than 350 for two consecutive years, they're forced and mandated by law to either consolidate or annex with the neighboring school district. So that's how our work began. The basis of our work, therefore, is education advocacy. We have moved into community development and youth empowerment in the rural communities that we work in today.
All right, and I'd also like to mention that we also have other members that who weren't able to make it here today. They include the Arkansas Association of Educational Administrators. That's the superintendents, many of them probably in your school districts. The Opportunity to Learn campaign, the Arkansas School Boards Association, the Arkansas Rural Education Association. And it's really incredible because a lot of times all these groups don't really see eye to eye on specific issues, but we really have found a common agenda here that we can all get behind that we're about to talk to you all about. And the key to that is we know that these things are going to help kids. So, we are here on Speak Up Arkansas, and I want to go ahead and mention right now that we would like to hear from you, and we'd like for you guys to participate in this conversation. And you can actually send us questions or comments at speakupar@gmail.com, or you can call in to the station. That's at 501-372-6119. Again, that's 501-372. Oh, I'm sorry, I've got the wrong number. I will get you that number, but let's go ahead and move on and kind of talk about what are we seeing here in Arkansas right now? What kind of is the state of public education? Would anybody like to kick us off?
Sure. The way that I see the state of public education, you know, we've made a lot of progress over the last decade since the Lakeview school funding case hit the state, hit the courts, and the legislature responded to that. And so during that time, we've made a lot of progress, and not as much progress as any of us would have liked. But I think we're in a position now where, with the change in the current political environment, progress hasn't been good enough for some folks that are more on the right. And so what we're seeing has their response to the state's education situation right now is really a legislative agenda really focused on a school choice agenda promoting charters and vouchers. When in fact we already have research-based proven solutions to really move education along. And I think going the route that they're wanting us to go in terms of school choice and charters and vouchers really just is not supported by the research. When we already know what works, and it's just a question of finding the political will, you know, to really do the things that we know work. And we have a lot of suggestions that we can go through today on that.
Mm. What, Brenda or Rich, why are we focusing on vouchers or things that maybe we have actually evidence that maybe don't work?
Well, again, it's the political climate that we're under right now. And it seems to be that others want to dismantle public education, especially in traditional public schools. Our public schools are succeeding. Our children are learning in those traditional public schools. But it just seems like we're being looked at as though our students aren't learning. Yes, we do have schools that are in academic distress, but there are still great things going on in those schools. And it just seems like at this point, it just seems like they want to punish public schools to have all of this accountability on public schools. But when it comes to public charter schools, there is less accountability. And all we want is for everyone to be held accountable to the same status. You know, why are children being sent and have vouchers to go to private schools when those schools aren't accredited? But therefore, public schools, we have to be accredited. We have to have certain standards. So just to see the dismantle of public schools and public education is very disheartening to me as an educator, because educators do the very best they can with what they have. And what we constantly need is support. Not only from the community, but also support just from administration to make sure that we are being successful with the students.
Well, I mean, I would just add to that. I think the choice agenda, quite frankly, is being driven by billionaires who have a personal agenda of school choice at the expense of traditional public schools is the way they think they need to go, by them and also by very conservative Tea Party types who, quite frankly, don't want to make the type of public investment through public tax dollars that's required to implement a lot of the research-based strategies. And so they're looking at choice has a way to basically reduce the state's commitment to funding public education the way that it needs to be funded.
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty concerned about the choice agenda. I say privatization, really, just because, mm-hmm. I mean, we're basically handing over a fundamental part of our democracy, and we're giving it to people who are in it to profit off of our children rather than in it to really educate kids. I just think that that's a terrible idea. Luckily, though, we do have work of education stakeholders to build on, and that's actually it's a huge kind of consensus-driven agenda that we have here that we're going to talk about today. The Arkansas Department of Education has adopted the Forward Arkansas Strategic Plan. That has the input of tens of thousands of Arkansans. The Association of Educational Administrators, they have their own state's principals and superintendents that have released a vision for improving Arkansas schools this summer with a very similar set of recommendations. The Opportunity to Learn campaign, which is they've collected input from 30 parent community and education organizations to create this agenda that focuses on the same things. The Arkansas Education Association, Brenda here, put forth similar, President Robinson, excuse me, put together a similar recommendations. The National Conference of State Legislatures, they've also issued a report last summer that compared education systems with the highest performing systems in the world and made a similar set of recommendations. Arkansas Advocates, also on board with many of these same things. And then the actual National Every Student Succeeds Act, federal law, also makes many of the same recommendations, particularly around community engagement, transparency, and accountability. So this is just a broad consensus among parent groups. And again, these are groups that aren't necessarily always on the same page. So I think it's important that we really think about these and say, you know, these aren't divisive proposals. These are things that our lawmakers should be focusing on rather than choice. And so let's go ahead and move on to some of those recommendations. And they fall into four categories. First, the first one is student-centered learning environments. So, Rich, could you kind of explain student-centered learning environments to us?
Sure. Student-centered learning environments are environments that really focus, one, on the needs of each individual student, but then also recognize that especially in a poor state like Arkansas, we have way too many kids who grow up in low-income households, many times living in poverty. And the research is pretty clear that when you grow up in poverty, you're at a disadvantage generally compared to your peers because a lot of times you lack those things that can only be purchased through money, you know, that will help you succeed in school, you know, later in life. And so some of the strategies of that we're recommending will help low income kids, especially catch up and be prepared to start school at a level with their peers. And so things like access to quality pre-K, strategies like interventions and individualized learning programs for kids that are falling behind, expanding access to quality after-school and summer programs, because one of the things that we know from the research is that oftentimes low-income kids don't have access to high-quality summer learning opportunities, and so they are much more likely to fall behind during the summer months, and then they have to spend part of the school year catching up to their more fluent peers who do have access to those high-quality summer learning opportunities. And doing things like wraparound services through nutrition programs, so that kids don't go to school hungry. Because one of the things that we know is that if a child goes attends school hungry, he's not as likely to learn. Making sure that kids have simple things like glasses, you know, so they can see the board, which oftentimes is a problem for many young kids in particular. I'm improving school discipline policy so that instead of kicking kids out of school, when that happens, they're missing valuable class time. Instead of doing that, I'm embracing new discipline policies like restorative justice that will do a better job with kids of teaching them accountability, but doing it in the school environment so that they're not kicked out of school where there's no hope of learning. Doing things like community schools, and Candace, I don't know if you want to talk just a little bit about community schools, because you all are kind of leading the effort on that. Do you want to say anything about community schools?
Yes. Well, you kind of hit on some of the points where providing wraparound services, that's kind of the basis of community schools, just making the school campus all-inclusive. So just not restricting it to the academic atmosphere, but serving the entire community. We're actually attempting to pilot that in three communities that we're working in now. We start the process with a group forming the core group, and they spend about 9 months or so developing a strategic plan on how they want to implement certain aspects of a community schools into their actual school campuses. So community schools are needed in Arkansas, especially in rural communities where schools are already the hub of the community. So that's something we're definitely pushing and advocating for now.
And Candace, I believe you were you all on that special education task force last year at all, by any chance? Well, you know, one bucket of recommendations last year, there was a special legislative task force on special education that developed a list of recommendations. And quite frankly, nobody this legislative session is even talking about those. And so for the future, that's going to have to be a higher priority area. I mean, doing things like counseling resources, which is especially important for low-income kids, you know, that quite frankly may not be as familiar with what do I need to do to be able to get in college or to be able to get into some training program, you know, when I'm done with high school. I mean, something as simple as that, but you would be surprised how many stories we hear about, you know, kids being told by their counselors, "Oh, you're not college ready. You can't go to college," when in fact they know nothing about what the a kid is capable of, and in many cases, schools don't even have enough counselors to begin with. So I think the whole area of student-centered learning environments, there's a lot that we know from the research about what we can do to improve outcomes. But yet the state is getting away from their financial commitment in those areas.
And I think also improving engagement between parents is something that we would lump in there too. Would anybody like to talk about trying to get parents involved and how we can maybe do a better job of that?
Well, we've been able to involve our parents through, well, going back to the community schools that we're attempting in these three communities by implementing a parent mentorship program. So those programs are based around parents being chosen to come into the schools up to three times a week, and they're assigned to a particular teacher, maybe one or two, and they're assigned to help and aid those teachers. And that's a way that's creating an environment where parents feel welcome and that they're especially needed. So that's one effort that we're using to engage parents, especially, like I said, in rural communities.
And Brenda, how does that help teachers when you have an engaged family coming in and working with the kids and working together with the educators?
Well, it's a great feeling when we're all working together and when the community comes in to help support, because we always need support. You just can't base education just on the school. That when the community comes in and may have mentorship or may read with children or, you know, just help out in the classroom, just help out wherever they are needed in school, it gives everybody a sense of community that we are working together for the common goal to make sure that our children are having the best outcomes and they're successful. And, you know, when parents come in and help, they do really help, you know, the students and the teacher, but the environment at the school has to be a welcoming environment for the community as well as parents to come in.
Yeah. I would also like to remind everyone at home, everyone listening, that this is Speak Up Arkansas. We do want to hear you. What are your thoughts on parent engagement? What do you think about what we've been talking about, these student-centered learning environments? You can call in and let us know at 501-433-0088. Or you can email us at speakupar@gmail.com. And I'm going to say that number one more time, 501-433-0088. And I'd like to go back to that special education task force that we were talking about. I think that kind of the impetus was that we're supposedly meeting all of the federal requirements, but our kids aren't actually achieving as they should. Is that right?
Yes, and I think there were some recommendations in there, though, that we need to, step up what we're doing for those kids, because we're not giving them the focus that we need to give them. And so, I'm not familiar with all the recommendations of that task force, but I know part of the answer, quite frankly, this session has been, you know, let's do more around vouchers for special education kids, which again is not an adequate solution to helping those students succeed. And again, I think it's just more indicative of where the legislature is in terms of their focus. And again, it's around privatization and choice. And I think the plan is to start with, you know, they've already started to some degree with special education kids. I think you mentioned earlier there's an effort this session to expand vouchers for foster care kids, with the thinking being there, well, it's going to be hard to for opponents of privatization to argue against giving special ed kids and foster kids more choice, and so they want to expand those populations, getting vouchers, and then go from there. And so I think it's really a concentrated effort to get their foot in the door on vouchers with populations that folks are not going to argue against politically, but knowing that they can go from there to try and expand it to the more general population of kids.
I think it's important also to mention that program, the schools who participate in the Succeed Scholarship Program, they've expanded that also to include schools without accreditation. And so that's for, you know, a kid could go to one of those schools for 4 years and end up without a diploma at the end of those 4 years. And another thing with that program, none of the accountability or transparency that the rest of the public schools have to abide by. And they also require those kids to waive their federal rights under the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act before they can participate in that program, right? And so why would you ask for that to happen if you're really going to be able to provide, or, you know, planning to provide such a great education?
Yeah, I mean, that's the same thing I'm thinking. Since in traditional public schools, you know, we have to follow the IEPs of those students. I mean, you know, we have to follow it to the letter, or, you know, educators and the schools could get in trouble for not following the IEPs or even the 504 plans that students may have. I just think it's not good for someone to give away those rights, because are you going to really meet the needs that your students, you know, really need? So really parents would be giving away that right, which I don't understand why any parent would do that. And as we talk about special ed, I know part of the task force, it was really reducing the paperwork, because there's a lot of paperwork that goes with those IEPs, just streamlining it to make sure that the teachers know exactly, the special ed teacher knows exactly the accommodations for the students. Then the regular classroom teacher also has to know the accommodations as well as the students. But, you know, there's not many educators going into special education simply because of all the paperwork that's involved.
And I think that may have been part of the recommendations too. They were talking about trying to streamline it and help, you know, help those teachers out with that. I almost took us on a segue about a bill that's going on right now, kind of vouchers in disguise, but we'll talk about that later. Let's go ahead and keep on with our plan, our consensus-based reforms, and talking about the second part, which is attracting, developing, supporting, and retaining high-quality teachers and administrators. Brenda, would you like to kick us off on that one?
Yeah, I would. I think the best way that we can develop and support and retain highly qualified teachers is to make sure, and administrators, is to make sure that we are receiving the best professional development in order to ensure that we are promoting and we are successful in the classroom and align it with professional learning communities. As well as administrators and teachers also need support, and not necessarily support as in financial support, but making sure that we have the resources that we need for our students. It's hard for educators to make sure our students are successful when we don't have proper technology working in, you know, the classroom, or not enough books for, you know, our students. Just not enough resources to make sure that our students are learning to the best of our ability. The times have changed now, and technology is the way to go, so we really need to make sure that we're ensuring that our students are receiving the resources that they need. And of course, the administrators, they always need support from, you know, from central office to make sure that we're all going in the right direction. But I think we all need professional development, and as a teacher, I need the professional development that helps me to be a better educator. Not a one-size-fit-all professional development sometimes that we get from our school district. You know, everyone goes to the same professional development. Just like we want to focus on students individually, teachers should have that. That should be promoted for teachers as well, for our individuality. And we definitely have to improve our teacher preparation practices to make sure that the students that are in the teacher ed program, that they're ready and they're equipped to come into the classroom to teach students. This summer I went to Finland and I visited the teacher ed program, and it's really a rigorous system before you even get out to become a teacher. You have to, it's a process. It's a process to be even picked to go into the College of Education. So I think that we have to do a better job to prepare them. And then as far as attracting, so the teacher pipeline is horrendous right now, just nationwide. People are saying, why would you go into teaching? You know, students aren't going, no one is picking the field any longer. That's because teachers have been demoralized, as if we are not successful in the classroom. That if students aren't achieving and schools are failing, it's solely because of the teacher. And that is not true. Our schools are failing because our state is failing our schools and our students. So if we don't come together again with that community involvement, everyone working together, parents, teachers, students, administration, school boards, superintendents, we all have to come together to make sure that we have great salaries for our teachers, that our teachers are supported. Teachers leave within the first 3 years, not because of the pay, it's because they're not being supported in the classroom by administration. So we have to really make sure that we're improving that, and just making sure that teachers coming out of the college prep and veteran teachers that we are culturally competent when we're teaching the children to make sure that we understand and we can meet every need that our students have.
Yeah, we're going to have to take a break here for just a second. Before we do, though, I'd like to remind you guys, anyone that wants to speak up on any of these topics, give us a call at 501-433-0088, 501-433-0088, or email us at speakupar@gmail.com. All right, welcome back to Speak Up Arkansas. This is a place for you to learn about and share the experiences of people impacted by policies, practices, and programs enacted by your elected officials or implemented by public officials, and whether they have a positive or negative impact. And we are here to hope to help you understand and act when you feel inclined to do so during this legislative session. And we today are talking with Arkansans for Quality for Education or for Quality Education. And I'd like to go ahead and just reintroduce everyone for the new people, if we could, real quick, starting with you, Brenda.
Brenda Robinson, sixth grade teacher and the president of the Arkansas Education Association.
Rich Huddleston, executive director, Arkansas Advocates for Children and Families.
Candace Williams, executive director of Rural Community Alliance.
And I'm Kyle Landberger with the Arkansas Citizens First Congress. And Arkansans for Quality Education, really, we formed to push for consensus-based education reform at the Capitol, and we have several other members as well that weren't able to join us here today. But that's kind of what we're talking about, is our consensus-based reform agenda. And next up, we are going to talk about the need to support infrastructure and resources that students need to move excellence. And Candace, would you like to talk about kind of the what that means?
Yes. We know that our schools need more support as far as infrastructure and resources are concerned. I want to hit on rural schools specifically. Act 60 really, it's killing rural communities. It's not really saving money. Children are still on very long bus rides, and they're arriving to buildings that are just not up to par. So our facilities are hurting, and transportation. No student should be on a bus ride for hours, you know, getting to and from home. It's taking away family time. It's taking away time that the students can actually go home and concentrate on homework. It's taking away time that they could spend on extracurricular activities. It's just, Act 60, it was not what this state needed. Some reform was needed as far as rural schools are concerned, but that was not the answer, and it has not been the answer. We did get some relief with that in the 2015 session. Rural schools that meet that, well, they get to the 350 number, they can apply for a waiver to remain open, but they have to apply for that waiver every year. Every year they have to prove that they're worthy to stay open, that they're serving their students, that they're fiscally sound, that their facilities are up to par. And it's just not, it's, I mean, these things need to be up to par, but if a school is performing well, they shouldn't be put to the ranks of that to have to prove every year just because they're at an arbitrary number of 350. In private school settings, small classrooms are pushed. But and we get to the public schools, it's too small. The classrooms are too small. So it just doesn't make sense to me at all. Like I said, we do need to work on providing adequate facilities and transportation to our schools. Very expensive bus rides that these students are taking to arrive to school buildings that are just not up to par. It's ridiculous. So, and these recommendations, they must be implemented to with sufficient resources for the students to have these positive impacts that we would want on the student learning environment.
Right, and so this is really, I mean, this is kind of one of the hardest ones, right? Finding the money to do it.
Yeah, but we keep dividing the money with vouchers and privatization, but that's another story.
Is anyone comfortable talking kind of about the adequacy
sure.
debate?
Yeah, you know, one of the things that came out of the Lakeview school funding case over a decade ago was was a requirement handed out by the Arkansas Supreme Court that Arkansas has to fund education at a adequate level, in quotes. So the state has been required to do an adequacy study every year, so that it has a per child funding level that's you know adequate to move them forward along education lines. And for the first few years after the court decision, the legislature did a really nice job of doing that study. And so state spending on adequacy, was usually in the 1.5 to 2% range. Then the recession hit and the state had to back off a little bit. That was a little bit understandable, but we've been coming out of the recession now for the last 4 or 5 years. And with the change in the political environment, and with term limits now, you have a whole crop of new legislators in there who, quite frankly, were not around during the Lakeview days, and so don't understand, don't understand the significance of that school funding case, and who came into the legislature with an agenda, quite frankly, to cut government spending, cut the role of government. And so what we've been spending on adequacy the last few years has been closer to 1% rather than 2%. And then on top of that, which I know 1%, that 2% doesn't sound like a lot, but quite frankly, it is a lot. I mean, it goes into the tens of millions of dollars, just that little difference. But this session, though, we're seeing even more backtracking on education adequacy. There were probably at least 4 or 5 proposed constitutional amendments that could get referred to the voters that the legislature has developed, at least considered this session, that quite frankly would take the courts out of the whole education adequacy debate. And so if the state was ever sued, it would become much less likely that a state Supreme Court would hand down a decision that would be favorable to increasing spending on education. Well, what we don't think any of those proposed constitutional amendments will be one of the three that get referred to the voters from the legislature, but it's still possible because I think there's still one open slot for another constitutional amendment this session. But I think this is just the beginning of more to come in terms of backtracking from that education adequacy requirement.
Yeah, I just would like to remind the listeners that we do want to hear from you on this show. This is Speak Up Arkansas, and we want to know what is your view on education reform. Give us a call at 501-433-0088. Again, that's 501-433-0088. And Rich, could I go back and ask you, What was the Lakeview decision? I know that we all say that word a lot.
Sure,
but
sure. Well, basically, it was a court case that worked its way up through the court system, in which a successful legal argument was made that the state of Arkansas was not meeting its duty under the Constitution to provide an adequate education for kids, and so we got a positive ruling out of the state Supreme Court that said, yeah, you not only need to reform education. Now, this was a decade ago, but quite frankly, you need to spend a lot more money, because we were way behind over a decade ago in terms of things like teacher salaries and what we were spending on various things. I think it's important to note, that one of the things that came out of that Lakeview Supreme Court decision, even though the court itself said that spending more on pre-K needs to be done, but they didn't mandate it. But I think folks in the legislature, pushed along by advocacy groups like us, felt that, well, the court may not have mandated more spending on pre-K, but it's clearly based on the research, one of the best things that we can do. And as a result of that, pre-K spending was increased by $100 million. Now, it took a couple of years to fully phase that in, but today we're serving a lot more kids in high-quality pre-K than we were a decade ago. Now we've not had a permanent funding increase eight years, and so now we're slowly backtracking from that commitment. But again, that just shows one of the benefits of that court case for a few years at least.
Yeah, and that was a bipartisan effort, right?
Right. It was definitely a bipartisan effort at the time, but I think, again, you're seeing today the current political environment, a move to want to cut taxes and to do that and still have a balanced budget. You need to cut spending on other things, including education, unfortunately, or at least slow the growth of new education spending. And so I think that's a big part of the agenda right now. Now, fortunately, we do have some allies in the legislature, so I think there may be pockets of opportunity where we can get a few funding increases, possibly for things like pre-K, after school and summer programs. Brenda, I don't know what the funding outlook is for teachers this session. You would know a lot more about that than I would in terms of the details, but so I would just be curious as to what's going on in this session with teacher salaries.
Well, very little is going on with teacher salary there. It's been signed, I believe, by the governor that the minimum salary schedule, that they would put 400 on the minimum salary schedule for next school year and another 400 on the minimum salary schedule for the following year. So that means those that are, just on the minimum of a bachelor's or minimum of a master's. But veteran teachers, as myself, that have been teaching for like 17 plus years, I've topped out on the salary schedule of my school district. And the only way that I will receive more money and I have a master's degree is to go to college and take more classes to get more money on the salary schedule. So it's a start for the state to put in, but we do also know that it's up to the school districts as well as to put in some money too for the salary.
And what about recruiting good teachers to rural areas? Candace, what's the state of affairs there? Because one of the things I've heard is that in some of the really poorer areas of the state, that may not be right next door to a major urban area, that it's becoming more difficult to do that. Is that right?
Yeah, it's increasingly it's getting more difficult to attract teachers to rural areas. Then that's why we have a lot of TFAs in rural districts and a lot of
TFAs.
Oh, Teach for America in rural districts, and a lot of the districts are asking for waivers, so they can have a person that doesn't have a teaching degree, in a classroom teaching. So, yeah,
And Candace, Teach for America, that's basically people volunteer to come in and teach kids, right?
Or, yeah, they volunteer. They come in for two years, and in exchange for college loans being paid off. So that creates, you know, another level, another problem where it's high turnover. People just come for that, you know, moment to satisfy what they agreed to do to get those loans paid off, and they're gone. So it's just creating a whole nother problem. So we really need to find some kind of way to implement a grow your own in these rural communities. Like Brenda was saying, President Robinson was saying earlier, the teaching profession has been demoralized. I remember growing up, and I had great teachers. I wanted to be a teacher. And the teachers that I had from small Elaine, Arkansas, they were from Elaine, Arkansas. And we don't see that today because the teaching profession is not exalted as it should be. So, yeah, that's definitely an area that we need help with.
I think that there are a couple bills. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but there are a couple bills to try and incentivize people to go in there. Is that?
Well, there is to go into the high needs subject areas and the high needs poverty areas to give teachers a little more incentive in doing that. I know that's programs that we've kind of already had in play, but I don't think it's really been utilized. So I'm hoping that we will get that even with the National Board Certified Teachers. I know there's a bill also out there to have them to go into the high poverty, high needs schools as well. But as Candace stated, that, you know, teaching is just not a popular profession any longer, simply because it seems like teachers, you know, are being punished for schools not succeeding. And when, you know, children look at that, or, you know, they hear things on the news or see, you know, the hard work that the teachers are doing, because we're on the front line every day on a daily basis trying to make sure that our students are learning. But when teachers are disrespected and mistreated, who would want to go into a profession? And then, of course, you know, you look at the money, but we know that going into teaching, there's not a lot of money. You do it for your heart. You do it for the children. You do it because you want to make sure that we have productive citizens. So again, it's we need to grow our own and just be more encouraging, even in our lower elementary schools, to talk the teaching profession up and say, you know, you can be a teacher, you can be, you know, whoever you want to be. And just maybe that would transpire into middle school and high school. And then, you know, we'll have students saying, hey, I really want to be a teacher because I want to make the difference in a child's life.
Speaking of those lives, we would like to hear from you guys about what was your experience like in public education. Give us a call in at 501-433-0088, 501-433-0088, or you can send us a message at speakupar@gmail.com, and we are monitoring that email account. We can ask any questions, or, you know, if you want to contribute to the debate in any way, we would appreciate it. And basically, I think I'd like to move on now to our fourth category here, and that's accountability. And is there someone who'd like to take the lead on accountability?
Well, I'll jump in there on accountability as far as it comes to assessments. That under No Child Left Behind, it was test and punish. It was a punitive to our schools. It was punitive to teachers. But now that we're under Every Student Succeeds Act, it takes that that punishment is away from it. So we don't look at assessment as a one-size-fit-all now. We have to really look at multiple measures, because before, just that one test seems to classify schools in academic distress or districts in academic distress. And we were only looking at that one snapshot that the student took that one time. And then we would deem schools in academic distress. So I am so grateful for the Every Student Succeeds Act, where it says that we can no longer just look at the assessment solely, that we need to look at multiple measures. Just how are our children performing in graduation rates, in student attendance? And we have to look at educating the whole child, because that's what's going to be best. So when we stop looking at that one test assessment, I think that our students will be very successful, as long as our school districts and students, when they take the test, sometimes, you know, students aren't great test takers. I mean, I could sometimes in elementary, students were just, we put so much pressure on them that they need to pass the test that, you know, some of them were throwing up or having headaches. I mean, we put so much pressure on them to pass this test, but I think now that since we're not just going to be solely looking at this one measure, we're going to look at multiple measures, I think the stress and the pressure will be released from everyone and that we could actually teach our children instead of teaching to the test.
Right, and there's also, you know, an issue that we've been talking about over and over again, just kind of transparency and accountability. One of our recommendations is that any school that receives public funding from taxpayers ought to have the same transparency and accountability. So that's any school or educational program that receives state dollars should meet the same standards for transparency and accountability. And I mean, that just seems like common sense to me. Is anybody else?
No, I mean, I would totally agree with that. And I think, I mean, I know we kind of said this earlier, but you know, one of the problems with the privatization movement right now is that more and more you're going to see for-profit schools try and get into the mix on both charters, but quite frankly, more so on vouchers. I mean, quite frankly, once you start getting for-profit entities into the mix, one, by definition, they're for profit. And so they want to make a profit at the end of the day. And many of these have their, have their base in publicly traded companies on Wall Street, you know, that work, quite frankly, stockholders are interested in making money. So they want their investments in these for-profit schools to make money. And so that means they're going to have to minimize costs in order to come up with some kind of profit. And so that's part of it. But the other part of it, too, is that as a general rule, for-profit companies don't necessarily want transparency and accountability about how they're spending their dollars. And that includes for-profit companies that are in schools, for that matter. So I'm sorry, we have a young visitor in the studio who's really adding some life to the mix here. So I think that's a major problem, but I would just add to that, you know, also right now, as Candace mentioned earlier, there's a growing movement where even more public schools under a law that was passed a few years back now can apply for waivers to existing state standards. Well, there's a reason why state standards are in place in the first place, and so to the extent that that becomes more of a trend, I mean, we need to make sure that those waivers themselves have accountability and transparency, and then also making sure that schools that we demand more from schools around serving low income populations, because it's much easier for schools to focus their time and energy on the kids that they think are more likely to succeed, and that has major implications along racial lines and along family income lines. And so some schools do better at that than others in terms of doing the right thing, but we need to make sure that in terms of accountability around outcomes, that our low income and most at-risk kids are really the focus of school efforts, because quite frankly, that's where the greatest progress needs to be made.
Right, and another thing is, you know, we need to hold schools more accountable for ensuring that the kids that are going there, the student populations, match the demographics of the communities, so that we're, you know, not resegregating our schools, which is what we're seeing happening with this school choice and charters. Could anybody kind of explain how the charters are able to kind of cherry pick students? Basically they're able to, it's an open lottery, right? So the kids can apply, but just that lottery process lends itself to people who are, you know, more familiar, or, you know, may have more resources to go ahead and apply. And then in addition to that, once the kids are in the school, they can actually be suspended or expelled for not, you know, there's some of the charter schools have extremely strict discipline policies, that kind of thing. And so we need to be making sure that they're doing things the same way that our public schools are doing, so that we're not resegregating our schools, basically.
Yeah. Right. And a lot of the students, too, that are in the charter schools, if they are behavior, they are released from the charter schools, and then they come back to the public school. Well, of course, the money doesn't follow them when they come back to the traditional public school. So you're right. We all need to be held to the same status, or accountability, should I say, standards and accountability, because we want to make sure that our at-risk children and children in poverty are the most neediest children, and we need to support them the best way that we should. And research shows that charter schools aren't doing a great job at educating our students. So if we just pull together and think about what's best for the students, and then how do we best support them, because at the end of the day, it's all about making sure that students are successful. And sometimes educators, we're accused of wanting to stay status quo. Well, we're not. We want to make sure that our children have innovative ways, that we teach innovatively. You don't have to go to a charter school to be an innovative teacher, because I'm an innovative teacher in a traditional public school.
Right, and I mean, that's kind of what we're not talking about the status quo today. We're talking about reforms with broad consensus from all these different stakeholders and research behind it that's proving it, you know. And so we really, Arkansas can't afford to be distracted by these failed experiments that are hurting kids in other states. And there aren't several silver bullets in public education. So we really need to be wary of these polarizing and untested experiments, especially when we have all these ideas that haven't been implemented yet. That's basically it. Is there anything else anyone would like to add on the recommendations right now?
Well, I would just encourage folks out there to I think there is a reasonable opportunity this legislative session to get some new funding for both pre-K and after-school programs. And so I would encourage folks to call your state senator, to call your state rep, and also to call the governor to say, hey, we need to put more money into pre-K, in after-school programs, and teacher salaries, because we know that those things are needed to really help our kids move forward. And so on behalf of Arkansas Advocates, we would encourage you to do that.
And also you can find this full list of recommendations. We do have it online at citizensfirst.org, and I think Arkansas Advocates, you may have it on your website as well. Another thing that we actually have a chance to really get involved in a big part of this push tomorrow, because let's see, 10:30 tomorrow morning, 1222, House Bill 1222 is up for a special order of business, and that is a bill. It's basically, I say it's a voucher bill in disguise. They're calling it's been rebranded as an education saving account. And so the legislators who are behind it, they keep saying, oh, it's not a voucher bill. But if you look at other states where these things have been implemented, nearly all of the funds spent are on private school tuition. That's just like a traditional voucher program. So, you know, if it walks like one and talks like one, it's probably a voucher program. that is going to be up for a vote in the House Education Committee, 10:30 tomorrow morning. And so we would encourage you can find more info on that on our Facebook page. That's Citizens First Congress on Facebook, or www.citizensfirst.org. And we also have an action alert where it will take you step by step in how to contact your legislator and make sure that make sure that they know that you are opposed to House Bill 1222. I don't know. Has anybody else know anything about education savings accounts?
Kyle, I think you said it very well.
Yeah. Another thing, actually, that I would like to add about the voucher programs is we know that they increase social, economic, and racial stratification. Research has shown that. And that's kind of some of the things that we've been talking about. And I think that ESAs are actually worse because they're, again, of greater utility to affluent families and students who don't have these disabilities or limited English proficiency, other disadvantages. And so, we really are just going to be kind of giving a windfall to the wealthy and helping families that are already there continue to go to these private schools, and at the cost of all the rest of us.
Yeah, you know, one quick thing I would add about that bill is that it would provide a state tax credit for folks who contribute money to these new nonprofits that will be set up under that act. And quite frankly, it's real the way it's designed, it's really going to be upper income taxpayers who are going to be able to make the most use out of those state tax credits. And so again, it will definitely have a bias for the wealthy in terms of who's going to benefit in terms of public tax dollars.
Yeah. All right. Again, I just want to thank all of you for being here. Arkansans for Quality Education, research-based education reform, avoiding these untested experiments. And we're here on Speak Up Arkansas. Thanks for listening. Next week, we're going to be talking about the role of the faith community in social change. So be sure to tune in with us next week at 5 o'clock.